television.
WandaVision.
Oh, so catchy, so good.
Welcome in,
Marvel fans, man fam, to a little Rants and Raves edition, the Mad About Movies podcast. Time we take a step back from the movies of the moment, which there are a lot of. We will get to them. Mm-hmm. We've got Ray and the Last Dragon talk. We'll get to Coming to America eventually here. Mm-hmm. And, oh man, Brian, the Snyder Cut. Some drama happening with the Snyder Cut on some leakage, maybe some sabotaging. We'll get all of that next week. Not next week, 2 weeks from now when Batman Shane joins us and we got all things Snyder Cut. So
we're recording this on March 9th and the Snyder Cut comes out, what, March 18th? Okay, so we still have time for that giant asteroid to take us out and prevent this from having to happen. Cool, all right.
I told Batman Shane, him and Juice, VIP Juice, can just roll that one. I don't know if the Mam Fam would appreciate that, though. But what we are going to do is that is going to be, I think, a VIP exclusive episode, the Snyder Cut.
Yeah.
We'll probably put a lot of that behind the paywall for the patrons, because they're the ones who talk to us about DC and kind of know what we actually think. We might put a little teaser out there on the main feed. But if you're really, really into Justice League, and you're really, really into what we think about, maybe what we might think about the Snyder Cut and all that surrounds it, become a patron in the next couple weeks. Yeah. It'll be worth it in the long run. We promise you at madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP. And that'll be a fun conversation where kind of anything goes. Because when we're on the main feed, to be quite honest with you, kind of make the show a little bit more, I don't know, not family friendly, but more, I don't know, well-rounded.
Okay.
So yeah, that's a good behind the paywall, I think we can be ourselves a little bit more and tell people how we actually feel, you know, a little bit easier with the people like, we've gained the trust with in the VIP.
So. Right. Like I said, when I pitched this idea to y'all of let's move that to the main feed and do a throwback, or excuse me, to the VIP feed and do a throwback on the main feed this week, I think I said, if people are going to tell us to go kill ourselves, at least make them pay $5 first. So that's what we're
going with. Well, I don't anticipate my hate to be that strong or my love to be that strong.
We'll see.
Maybe if I love it so much, people will tell me to kill myself because they think it's so bad. Maybe it'll be one of those like Rise of Skywalker situations, you know, where I love it, but people are telling me to kill myself because I like a movie. So that's
what a fun couple of months that was, going from Joker to Rise of Skywalker and just riding wave of emotions on the internet for a couple of months. What a time.
I want to set you on fire emails and things like that. Mm-hmm, so it was, you know, a good time to be a movie reviewer.
Right.
And all that. But, you know, we take a
stand. Hey, at least we got paid a lot to say that we like Star Wars. We did. Though,
it was Todd Phillips direct deposited a lot for that. So
paid for all three of our vacation homes. So that's good.
Just kidding. All right. Well, it's going to be fun to talk WandaVision. And speaking of the VIPs, there's been a WandaVision spoilers channel in our Discord. And it has been so fun this entire time, basically, since episode one aired. Before that, we started the channel and people were talking about the trailers and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then as this has come out, we've had that communal experience with our VIPs every Friday morning or Thursday night for some people, because some of our VIPs stay up late until it premieres at 2 a.m. or whatever it is, East Coast, to talk about it and get their first reactions and kind of live talk about it. And I mean, the amount of speculation and rumors surrounding this show, I mean, I've never seen anything like it. Sure. And I mean, it dwarfs even The Mandalorian with like the amount of Easter egg and talking points surrounding the show. Mm-hmm. And I think that's awesome. But I want to shout out to our WandaVision spoilers channel, because we're going to start another one here next week with The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And that'll be a lot of fun to undig that one as it goes week by week. And I'm glad Disney decided to do it this way. Marvel Studios decided to do it this way. They didn't really do it this way with WandaVision. And I guess we could start there, Brian. Because episode one of WandaVision... actually, before we do that, I should say spoilers are going to be full in this episode. So hopefully everyone that's listened to this has seen all of WandaVision. If you haven't, you need to see it all before listening to this. That's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say it right then. Okay? Fair warning. Yep. So episode one of WandaVision, we kind of get, I don't know, a straight sitcom, old 50s style sitcom with Vision and Wanda. And there's not much left to interpretation in terms of where they're going to go, Brian. And so what they did was they released two episodes that first weekend. And so in that second episode, they go a little bit more into like what could be going on. And so I think they probably sat around that table and were like, yeah, this is going to be really jarring if we just release this episode by itself. Because people are going to be like, what is this? You know? But yeah, those two, it really does give it context. That was very
for funny. Sure. For sure. No, and that was the experience that I had. So Lindsay and I sat down with Coop to watch this. And I was aware this may not be his jam, but we're going to give it a try. We watched the first episode and he was like, no, thanks. I'm out. Not interested at all. Which I totally get. This show was probably going to be a hard sell to. Yeah, he's about to turn 8. So it's a hard sell for a 7-year-old anyway, I think, but especially that first episode when it's in black and white and it's, I think, very accurately old fashioned in the way that it's set up and the sort of I Love Lucy feel or I Dream of Jeannie feel or whatever to it. That's a tough sell for a 7-year-old that's used to watching, you know, 70 Pokemon episodes a day and stuff. So so we stopped. So like that night we're like, okay, cool. We'll put it aside. Lindsay and I'll come back. We'll watch this later. And then we didn't until episode 4 was out, I think, or maybe 5. I need to go back and look and get the episode where, oh yeah, it was episode 5. So I didn't watch it again until episode 5 was out. And at that point, I think my brother texted me and was like, hey, you have got to catch up on this because you're going to really...
I recommended it after that first week and was just like, I could see where this is going. And this is a total Brian Richard type of thing. You know, there's not a lot of stuff I recommend to you guys, but that was one where I'm like, dude, this is made for people like us who, I don't know, kind of have this back knowledge of all this stuff.
30 minutes is a tough thing to do in a non-binge format, I think. I think this was the right decision to put this out weekly. I think they did the right thing with that. Same as with Mandalorian, and I think the same with Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I think I like the week to week in some ways. I know it drives some people crazy, but I think some shows binge better than others. 30 minutes is kind of a tough cutoff. So, you kind of like, if you base your whole night around, all right, cool, we're going to watch WandaVision. It's like, oh, 22 minutes. All right, we're done. All right, okay. All right. Now, you know, what do we go from here? But anyway, so we watched 4 episodes in a row after that first one. And I was super locked in by that point. So I think it built really well. I'm impressed with, I think they, to your point from the outset, I think they made the right decision to put out both of those episodes in week one to try to give people a real taste of what was coming. Because that first episode really does kind of feel like, now having seen all 9 episodes, it really does kind of feel like an outlier in terms of the plotting of it. Like there's very little hints of what is to come. Except with Vision's boss like dying and her trying to get Vision to save him and stuff like that. That's the only real moment in that first episode that kind of gives you a hint of things are coming, like things are going to be different and we're going to move forward and do something. This is doing something interesting and strange and it's going to take a while. I think every episode after that for the next like 3 or 4 episodes gives you a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. So I think they were smart to do 2 episodes week one and then, but I enjoyed the week to week. I thought it was something to look forward to. I think it worked pretty well from a format standpoint and the way the show built through the course of the season. I think it worked really well on that front.
I'm with you. This is, I don't know, one of the funner, maybe Mandalorian season two was a lot of fun for me to wake up to. Mm-hmm. Game of Thrones towards the end was really fun, but this is sure. This is one of the more fun experiences I've had watching a show. So there was a lot of speculation after that first episode, Brian, about what this is. You know, it's like, because we've mm-hmm. seen Endgame at this point. Like, everybody watching right. this, I assume, knows Vision and Wanda, right? And so you're like, okay, spoiler alert, we know what happens with both of them in those movies. And so, like, so how could this series be a thing? Like, what's going to happen? You know, how is this possible? And so that's where the rumors start, right? That first episode, you're like, okay, is this, are they dead? Is this are they mm-hmm. in purgatory now? Is this all a dream? Is this some kind of a technological breakthrough that they've made with within S.H.I.E.L.D.? You know, some kind of, you know, it's already so fun to talk about, like, right? Just the kind of premise of a sitcom world with these characters. So I want to start there. I think the entire way they went about this is just freaking awesome, dude. Mm. Like,
so hold on, before we get, I'm sorry, I don't want to cut you off, but I can't remember. Were you excited about this? Were you into this idea?
I was not into a show This is the thing. I was not into a show about Wanda or Vision. And I think Marvel Studios understands that most people don't give a crap about Wanda or Vision. In fact, if they probably power rank the characters among all the fan base, Wanda and Vision would probably rank near the end, mm-hmm. probably lower than characters who have been killed off in earlier movies or are like Agent Coulson and people like that, right?
Yeah.
And so, no, when they announced WandaVision, I'm like, oh God, this is the first thing they're going to do. And I was like, oh geez, you know, this made me really nervous.
It seemed like a risky one to base this whole bit on for this. Like it seems like it could have been, yeah. If you go Falcon and the Winter Soldier, that seems like a really easy one to introduce this concept with, but they didn't, and it seems to have worked out. But I'm with you. Like Vision, especially, I like Wanda fine, but I will admit that at least some of it is that I really like Elizabeth Olsen, so that's part of it. But Vision in particular, I think is the most boring character to me in the whole of the MCU. Like anytime he's on screen in Avengers movies, I'm just kind of you know nodding off. He kind of, and I love Paul Bettany, but Vision himself just really did not interest me at all. And I don't think that the MCU movies really use Scarlet Witch or Wanda too well either. So it's like, I was super not excited about this at all, like at all. And then it turns out this was pretty stinking good.
If the only reason, I mean, this is going to be my thesis at the end too, but if the only reason this show exists is to make us care or give a crap about Vision and Wanda, then mm-hmm. mission accomplished.
Sure.
Right.
For me,
because I now will look at them in a different context when I'm watching Avengers Age of Ultron, right? Mm-hmm. When I think maybe some of that goes back, some of the hate for Vision goes back to that film and kind of the origin and how that was done, and it was kind of sloppy and you knew it was coming and it was kind of rushed and the whole Jarvis thing, and yeah, sure. Maybe if that was done or retconned in some way, I would like that. I would like Vision more, but this series makes me appreciate Vision more. But all that to say, the entire approach from Disney Marvel on this, the boldness that they had, the balls that they had to do it this way,
mm-hmm. yeah,
I love, man. This like makes me want to like just pour money into Disney stock. You know, like this makes me think that they freaking get it. You know, like when they can do anything that they want. Anything, mm-hmm. and on planet Earth, they decide to do this, and some people might have hated it. Some people probably didn't get it, but it's such a creative leap from what they're normally used to doing, and it showcases their ability to break out of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, so mm-hmm. to speak. Does that make sense? Sure. While staying within the world that they've built, and to give whole new enriched life to these characters, sure. and to pay homage to honestly, the shows that built us, you know. I mean, we'll get into all that stuff and the shows that they reference and all that, but I mean, just the approach and to do it this way, instead of saying, all right, we're just doing a show about Wanda and Vision and they're living in Avengers Tower and that's the show and mm-hmm. here's a villain. Like, they could have done that and people would have watched it and it probably would have been pretty good, right? But this was like, they sat down and said, we're not doing that. We're going to do something way creative, like very, like something like you've never seen before. And I was honestly really surprised and very delighted by just the whole WandaVision universe that they made here with this 10 episode thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an ambitious thing. Like, it's, and Disney gets tons of crap, and some of it, I think rightly so. And some of it maybe not, but they get a lot of crap for making sort of cookie cutter type stuff and mass audience things. And this is mass audience in that it's an established property. It's people that, you know, from a movie, the biggest movie of all time. It's, you know, it's beautiful people. Like, both of them are good looking people and very charismatic and all this sort of stuff. So it, like, it gets that part obviously, and it inherits that, and it uses that quite well to its advantage, the show does. But this is it's a pretty ambitious endeavor to make each episode so different and to base it in such a different world. Every episode is such a different world. And to really, I don't know how you felt, but like watching episode one, I was like, I kind of thought this is a fun bit, but it does kind of feel like a gimmick. And I wonder how long it'll take before this kind of wears off for me, before this is not endearing anymore. And now it's just kind of tired. But instead, I'll be honest, I was very impressed with the lengths that they went to make each of those episodes feel like the period that they're supposed to be in. And wholly impressed with Elizabeth Olsen, especially, and the different characters that she plays along the way based on the era that episode is in. I thought, again, I love Elizabeth Olsen. I'm a big fan, but I wasn't. That's a really, it's a pretty subtle performance that she's putting on over the course of 9 episodes. Well, at least those first 7-8 episodes, because that's a lot of different hats that you got to put on and play different versions of that character. And that's really tough. Like, it's really impressive that she was able to pull that off with such authenticity. Like I think it's episode 7. I'm pulling it up. Yeah, the episode 7, which is the mockumentary episode. I mean, she's just full on channeling Julie Bowen in Modern Family in that episode, and it's like, man, she's really getting this. This works very well.
Before we talk a little bit more WandaVision, welcome in a special guest. Got to thank our sponsor for this episode, our friends over at Keeps. Guys, so much of our identity is wrapped up in our hair. In fact, 2 out of 3 guys are going to start losing their hair by the time they're 35. It's just a fact of life, but it doesn't have to be, because you can get treated from home with your friends from Keeps. Keeps offers generic versions of the only 2 FDA-approved hair loss products out there. You may have tried them before, but never for this price. When I learned I was starting to lose my hair, I wanted to do something about it, and that's where Keeps has helped me. If you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss this year, and maybe forever, go to keeps.com/Matt to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's keeps.com/Matt. Keeps makes it so much easier to keep your hair. So take advantage of this offer. Keeps.com/Matt, guys. Keep your hair 2021 with Keeps. Before we talk about, you know, what this means, MCU characters that are in this and stuff, I want to talk some about the shows that are featured. Mm-hmm. And great timing here, because joining us now via satellite.
Look at that guy.
Richard Arby Barden. He can't hear us, but we're going to try and...
What's up? How's... we WandaVisioning, I presume. Sorry for being late. I had something to run after, but I'm glad to be here. Glad to be talking. I actually watched a show, guys. I've temporarily came out, like, you know, Evel Knievel from retirement and watched a show. And yeah. Are we doing general thoughts?
Yeah, we're still in that, and okay, we're just kind of wrapping with just the approach of this show.
Yeah,
because I was saying that Marvel can do anything that they want.
Sure.
And to do a show that kind of mimics old school sitcoms, I think is really bold. So, what's your thought on just the whole approach of WandaVision before we kind of get into some of the more specifics?
Yeah, man. I did not read any sort of. I have no idea how this was received, other than the memery of it all, which I think is what I loved about it. Was, and I wish Netflix would do this with, I understand their model with bigger releases though, like four times a year. This felt huge because it went on for 6-8 weeks, right? It felt,
yeah.
I have no idea what its watch numbers were. I assume very high because of, you know, the Marvel piece and the Disney piece, but this just felt like such a big event. Whereas Netflix shows, even the really big ones, you know, 4 or 5 days after their release, there's kind of a moratorium on talking about them because you don't know where everyone is, et cetera, et cetera. I just really liked the staggered release, and this felt really big. And that's part of what I really liked about it.
That's a good point with binging and talking about it with people. You don't know where everyone is. It's talk about it with people who have seen the entire thing. It's like, right, have you seen Bridgerton? Like, yeah, I'm at episode 4. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, well, so, okay.
and I get that. If you want to do that with a lot of shows, Netflix, I think that's cool. There is something fun about, oh, wow, 13 episodes of this are up. But I think for your tentpole stuff, there's something to be said about releasing it 2 at a time to kind of feed the, you know, critical industrial complex to talk about it, to meme it and everything. Anyway, I say all that to say I came to this a little late. I started last week after a lot of it had been done. So other than, you know, the, you know, winky meme and stuff like that, I was a little unfamiliar. And I don't know if this was like a huge hit critically or really slammed, other than, you know, little sarcastic jokes here and there, but I did like the ambition of it, but I still don't really understand what it was trying to do. It was like half of, you know, which is the intent was a walk through memory lane of television history, but also partially like really important stuff going forward of different parts of the Marvel universe and all these things at once, which is effective. But as a viewer, I was very confused by it. Totally. I can't say I didn't hate it. I definitely didn't hate it, but I can't say I really enjoyed watching it because it was just, I kind of watched the whole thing. I can do faces because we're on video, like Mad About Movies podcast / VIP. If you want the video of this episode but I just kind of watched the whole thing. Like, what is this coked out Marvel nightmare, but I'm enjoying it. But you know, but that's what it felt like. It
that
felt
needs to
like
be the Rotten Tomatoes right there.
Yeah, maybe. So, but yeah, so that's kind of my thoughts on it, but generally. But as we go more specifically, I'll have more positive things to say because there's a lot to like about this show, but it's hard to really quantify in a blurb, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I think at the outset, the goal of this, Richard, and I'd already kind of said this, was to make us care more about these characters.
Yeah.
And at the same time,
for sure. I'm not sure it accomplished that though. For me at least.
Oh, okay. We'll get there. We can get there.
Okay.
But at the same time, introducing new characters, right? Because I think there's so many characters that they're going to try to put into movies that need backstories and need people to care about that they don't want to waste a 20 minutes of a 2-hour movie on. And so you can throw Jimmy Woo in a movie now and people almost instantly will be like, all right, let's go. And Jimmy Woo's here. And you can do that with things like this at the same time having those tentpole characters. So I think that's great. I think that's a great approach, a great way to do this. And it's a great way to use Disney Plus, man. To kind of build these worlds without having to spend the money on theatrical distribution and then boom, hit them with these huge, big, movies that really solidify what you're doing on the streaming platform and everything. So I think that's awesome. And Richard, you joined just in time because I want to talk about these sitcoms that they kind of spoof reference. I think that was one of the funnest parts for me. I mean, I'm an old school sitcom nut. I think like the Dick Van Dyke Show and Isle of Lucy influenced me more than like Rugrats and Ren and Stimpy and stuff when I was like that age, you know? Like I've seen every episode of all
different shows, but I'm the same.
Same comedy. Same exact comedy.
Just Twin Peaks. I think Stimpy old is, 80s Twin Peaks.
Lucille Ball of our time.
Right.
You always watch Twin Peaks in a Twin Peaks, though. That's the impressive.
The only way to watch
while
it, ironically.
To the band Twin Peaks.
Too. Yep. Yeah. Next to the Ren and Stimpy guy, who's a huge perv, and he likes to hang out at the same Twin Peaks. So that's cool too.
Yeah. I heard about that.
So it all comes together sort of perfectly.
God, what? How awful would it have been if they had produced one of these shows and then it's just like Dick Van Dyke. Me too. And they got this whole episode based on
it. And you're like how?
And it's like
he's
the 100. Week
before.
Yeah.
And it's not. I mean, I'm serious. You're going to think this is from the 70s. Nope. Last week.
I'm serious. What if they had made this show in 2013 and like, all right, we got a Cosby Show spoof episode. Get ready for this. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're just everything looked out. But yeah, man, I love old school black and white. Those like formulaic, touchstone, really cornerstone sitcoms. And if anything else, this show made me go back and watch all those shows, the shows that are referenced here. I'm like, gosh, I love that episode of Dick Van Dyke with the walnuts. So I need to go back and watch that. And I did. It was great. But so it starts out kind of chronologically with an I Love Lucy-esque episode. It wasn't really that, but it was kind of trying to build something around that. And it makes me think that they had a lot of conversations internally about intellectual property rights and how much can we do without getting sued by Desilu Productions or you know, with a lot of this stuff. And, you know, you see the later in the in the series when they do the Modern Family, that's almost a direct spoof because I guess they probably have a lot closer relationship with ABC than they do with, behind Modern Family. I don't know if it was ABC. It was on ABC.
It was on ABC. I think that's actually both ways. I think that's a Fox show. I believe that's a 20th Century Fox Modern Family, which was on ABC, but then none of that matters anymore because Disney bought that too. Well, so like I said, the relationship either way, they got it.
they got it. And so that was kind of cool to see them do that and see, oh, they've got separate beds like they used to back in the day, and to see some of the lines that they would use and how that would work. But it works in such a satirical way too, guys, that I didn't expect how back in the day when these sitcoms were on, they were like the idealized version of life, right? It almost was like
two twin beds and a master.
Should be
the
living.
Dream.
It was almost like you're watching a Good Housekeeping magazine, and like this is the standard to live by when you're watching Leave It to Beaver. You know, like you need to be wearing pearls while you're vacuuming and things like that. And as the show progresses, and they do it in such a clever way that works with the story that they're telling, that the world. That fake world collapses right around you, and the way these sitcoms work is almost that exact same way, right? In fact, the episode is literally called Breaking the Fourth Wall. When episodes and sitcoms start to break the fourth wall, Wanda herself breaks the fourth wall and realizes, oh my god, what is happening? This is what I've done and all of that. I just thought that I didn't expect that satirical timeline to work that way with the story and the breaking out of the world and the sitcoms representing kind of her mind space during that time and the idealization of reality and things like that. And this is all aside from like the characters and what this means for Thor down the line and stuff. Like this is stuff that, I was very, very, I'm surprised by it and really enjoyed about it. But y'all have any thoughts on that?
Go ahead, Brian. I've talked a lot since I've joined.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I was also a little bit surprised by it, and I was very pleased that it was able to pull those things off and to keep me, not just keep me entertained, but to keep me guessing on how it was going to play out week to week and what kind of tropes they were going to play with and sort of
for
sure
when they were gonna do Michael Mallie show
a ton of money on that Yeah. Right. I shouldn't have bet on Yes Dear. That was a mistake. But I really hit on Malcolm in the Middle pretty hard.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I thought it was really
Mysteries of Wanda.
Laura, that'd be so. Gosh, imagine she's a cop and a mom, guys,
and a witch. That's what's hard. The witch part.
How? It's amazing. I'm in. Yeah, like I thought, kind of speaking to what Richard said when he jumped in here, like I thought that the self-contained elements of it were the best. That was the part that I was the most into. As it ties into the MCU at large, maybe less successful or less interested, I guess. But if you just look at this as an island within the Marvel Cinematic Universe, love the island. Now, how it connects to the rest? Maybe not. We'll see. I think you're right, Kent. Like part of the plan was like to get people invested in these characters. It worked for me. It sounds like it didn't work for Richard. I've seen lots of people on both sides of that. You know that it did work or it didn't work. So,
It worked for me, and I like them more. I care about them more than I did. I still don't really care about them for, you know what I mean? So
we came in with the established, we said this before you came in here. Yeah. We were super uninterested, especially in Vision, but in both of them, prior to the show. So if that goes from a 1 to a 4, that's still pretty, you know, that's an improvement.
That's exactly the numbers I was going to use for me. Yep. For sure. Okay. Literally. Sure.
But I did really love the self-contained.
The old 1-4 Eduardo Nájera, baby.
So I wanted to ask you guys what your favorite spoof there was, what your favorite old school sitcom was. I like the Brady Bunch episode too a lot. Mm-hmm. But I think the episode that really accented not only spoofing a sitcom, but also really worked well with the story, was the Malcolm in the Middle one. And the introduction of the twins and how the twin characters and the brother characters work in that show, Malcolm in the Middle, and how they bring back Quicksilver Pietro, mm-hmm. the Evan Peters version, by the way, of Quicksilver Pietro. And
that was cool.
They have him as kind of the older brother from Malcolm in the Middle, right? And so they have that, them doing the narration the whole time and everything. And at the same time, Vision himself is this Bryan Cranston character. He's just completely nuts. Like, you know, it's kind of losing his mind. He's at a circus. It's like, what the heck's going on? And the mom is typical Jane Kaczmarek, right? Is trying to keep the kids at bay. And everything's going crazy around the neighborhood. There's a Halloween party. That's a great little bottle episode of TV, you know. But I thought that one worked probably the best with like the story that they needed to tell, and they're not just like tacking a sitcom on top of it, you know. Like it actually felt like organic to WandaVision and the story. Like it felt like, oh, this is reminiscent of Malcolm in the Middle, but it's like not what we're doing here. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought, you know, it's funny, like you said, my favorite sitcom ones, like the Brady Bunch one was good, but it was like a very, it's different between which were my favorite episodes of spoofing sitcoms and which were my favorite ones they chose to do. Meaning the Brady Bunch is a pretty lazy thing to spoof, right? Like we've all seen that, done that, you know, even the kind of Dick Van Dyke-y stuff is, to me, it was more interesting to do something like Modern Family just because I haven't seen that really spoofed before. Malcolm in the Middle, certainly. But those episodes were of, like, you know, the Brady Bunchy stuff was very good. It was very well done. So it's like, what's my favorite one they chose to do versus my favorite episode is kind of a difficult, because it was like, oh, well, they're doing this world. Okay, this is funny. This is cool.
The 90s kind of Full House, Married with Children.
Yeah, like late 80s. Or 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Family Ties. That was the era when the show started. I was like, I wonder how they're going to do that. Wonder which show they're gonna pick. And yeah, it's like they pick Family Ties with a mixture of like Full House.
Yeah, and Step by Step, kind of. Yeah. I thought that was the episode.
It was funny, the twins.
Press start over, make it.
The twins and the fact that the Olsen twins were in Full House and all that. That was funny how they did that. But
I thought that's episode 5, I think. And that was the one to me that really broke out of the, we're taking the concept and the trope and kind of just, we're going to lay our concept on top of it. And the kind of intertwined them for the, maybe not the first time, but successfully for the full episode. I thought that was the one that kind of broke that out a little bit and maybe unlocked a little bit of what's to come in the next few episodes. So
yeah, that one was the one that was called We Interrupt This Program, which is when you you finally kind of see the outside world. And I mean, some of the stuff that they were able to do with the outside and the new characters that they introduced, I was all about it. I'm all about the sword kind of level of this stuff, you know, like the whole backstory of that, the Monica Rambeau stuff, how that connects to Captain Marvel and that past, how she's gonna be like this awesome character, I think, going forward as Photon or whatever. I think that's her name, Photon. But yeah, that is going to be really fun. But that was a fun one to break out of the sitcom world and see, okay, what's going on with S.H.I.E.L.D.? What's going on with the Avengers? And that, man, that opening of that, I don't know, remember if it was that episode or I think it was earlier that when they first introduced Monica, where she like wakes up in the hospital, like as the snap is reversed, right? And all these people are coming back to life and the hospitals are overwhelmed. I was like, that is, you know, it's reminiscent of the beginning of Avengers Endgame where, you know, Hawkeye's house and the kids disappear. It's like when you put these things into like that real world perspective, real world situations of like, wow, if this actually happened, how would it be and how would people react? That was one of those moments. And gosh, what a scene. And that was, I think our Discord, like, absolutely lost it on that episode. They're like, all right, it felt like we were back in Avengers Endgame again, you know. It's like we're back in the MCU and it's official now and this is it. Oh my god, that was a incredible sequence, how they took the whole concept of that and the people coming back and her running through the corridors and all that. I mean, that was fantastic. But all that to say, I love the sword aspect. What about you guys?
Yeah, I think it's a really cool way to bring that part of the MCU into this show. I mean, the blip is a really, I think, is a very interesting thing just to explore in these movies or in the show. And so it was fun to see them approach that and give a little more depth to it. And I don't think, I mean, that we have, well, I know we haven't, that we in the movies, you don't get a real glimpse at what that would look like if you're just a normal human being. We get it when everybody comes through the portals or whatever, and that's one of the great moments in action movie or comic book movie history. Is really cool, but this was just as affecting in some ways because it's like, whoa, holy cow. Like I guess I hadn't really thought about like, wow, what would that be like if you're on the opposite end of the blip? You kind of spend some time in Endgame kind of exploring the after effects of being, you know, left behind essentially. But you don't really get into what's it like when everybody just starts randomly popping back in and stuff. So, man, I thought that was really cool, and it was a great open to that episode.
I thought that was incredible. I absolutely loved that, and I loved, I don't know, the consequences of some of this stuff. Like
this had such, yeah.
It's not like they just destroy cities in the MCU, and it's just like, all right. City destroyed, next movie. You know, like they feel like they've done damage, like they're destroying the planet.
I think they've definitely recovered from that, because I think that was an issue, I think, right, in like kind of phase two of Marvel, where it was just sort of entire civilization
movie.
Yeah,
did that, yeah,
exploding stuff, but everything's fine. But yeah, I think I think now, you know, they've recovered from that and figured out ways to add that sort of humanity to it, which is great.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. And I don't know if it actually came to fruition in this series. I guess I didn't pay it that much close attention, but there was a lot of talk on our WandaVision channel feed about like the multiverse opening up, because like doing a blip and then a reverse blip and then a blip, you know, like that screws up space-time so bad that this is going to open up basically anything being possible in the MCU. Like, just wait for this next Spider-Man movie, this multiverse of madness. They're going to be like, oh, what we've done with the snap has destroyed the fabric of the planet and space-time. Now all possibilities are possible. And so now anything is going to be possible. And they're going to, here's Hugh Jackman. And oh yeah, here's Tobey Maguire. All that stuff's going to be possible. And that's going to be, I guess, fine. I guess an organic way to make that happen.
Yeah.
Instead of just forcing them in there, you know, some weird way, and just say, all right, here's Tobey Maguire again, because people liked those movies, you know? So yeah.
Yeah. That Spider-Man movie is going to really, that was the first thing I thought about towards the end of this whole thing. Was like, man, you know, Marvel, you know, Kevin Feige, they don't do anything. They don't do anything by accident. They don't do anything without it planned out 40 steps in advance and stuff. And boy, this is going to have direct tie-ins to this Spider-Man movie that just apparently is just bringing back literally anyone who has ever been in a Spider-Man movie.
Is it that thing too, where, I'm actually asking you this, Brian, because I think you're the perfect person to ask because of Coop. Man, this is, I mean, I'm old, right? I'm 34. I'm not in the target demo for this. You know, I'm part of it, but I'm on the north end of it. It takes quite a bit of sort of like memory and a little maybe Wikipedian for me to like track all these timelines and like where it's going. Are kids able to just kind of do that? Is that, or is,
yeah,
man, this pretty convoluted plot line here? And Coop's a little, now granted, I'm a little old and Coop's probably a little young. You know, what is he now? He's like 9, 8,
he'll
7?
Be 8.
Yeah, 8. Okay.
Shortly.
So maybe we're looking more for, maybe they're targeting more like 12 or something, right? I don't know.
Sure. No, I think you're onto something. I mean, there's too much to, it's too much. It's too much. It's like, it's.
But like, if they're watching them multiple times a year, which I'm not, maybe, but I'm actually asking. I'm not trying to say it's stupid.
No, I mean, I think that is something. I mean, that's, we talked in for when Endgame came out, we talked about how, what a ridiculous accomplishment this whole thing was, right? Like to pull that off for 22 movies or whatever it is, and to have it all make sense and to be good and to be, you know, something that is enjoyable for throughout from start to finish pretty much. And that's incredible. But also, like, we've kind of reached the limit of what our brains can keep when we go into one of these movies,
right?
You know, like that was one of the things I loved about the first Guardians of the Galaxy, was like, it felt so separate from everything else that it was like, it's the themes that I dig and the, you know, the general quality that I like, you know, all these things that are very familiar and
tone
and comfortable. Yep. Yeah, totally. They're very comfortable, but it's a story that I don't have to like, okay, now how does this tie into Iron Man and how do we, you know, all these sorts of things. So I do think, I mean, it's not totally dissimilar at this point to like, when the final season of Game of Thrones came out, my wife was like, I think I want to watch this show because it's such a cultural thing. So,
sure.
You know, let's watch the show. And I had watched it from the outset, and we're like 3 episodes in and I'm doing like yarn charts on the wall to like help her remember like who all these
Always
people
Sunny
are.
And,
exactly. I mean, it's just, it's too much. And it helps in this versus that. It helps that Spider-Man is easier to remember than, what, you know, whatever, Robert Baratheon or something like that, but it is still, it's a lot. It's a lot.
And it's before,
to keep in your brain.
I mean, Tobey Maguire was done doing Spider-Man before Coop was born, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so, you know,
and I can tell you, too. He does not give a rip about those Andrew Garfield ones, like at all. Like, if we put
those
Spider-Man,
those
like,
don't
exist.
Yeah.
Stuff? And so, Yeah, it's a risky play to have that much that kids especially need to remember, or at least to like base level right. sort of understand.
Well, the great thing, and Ken, I know you have thoughts. I just want to interject this real quick. The great thing about the Kevin Feige guided comic book universe, Marvel universe, is the real, and they're not necessarily note for note takes from these comic book plots, but the real understanding of that world, the interlocking plots of that world, the interlocking timelines of that world, and really working that into mass pop culture entertainment. And I would worry, mm-hmm. They pulled that off great with phase one. They pulled it off great with phase two. They pulled it off exceptionally in phase three in terms of that, really that structure. And then the overall phase A, right, of all of those interlocking together. I worry, my concern would be, and granted, we've seen 1% of what the next phase will be. So things will become more apparent to us and we'll see how they do it. But just seeing this, it's like, man, this is going to be convoluted AF, man. Like this is going to be like, this is going to be a lot. And at least from my, and I hope they're not going too far into the comic, like, okay, we now are doing comic book movies, because
right.
a lot of kids that like these are going to be traditional comic book fan kids, but a lot of kids and people, they're not just kids movies, but that's who buys the toys. That's what pays for the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. But a lot of kids that like at least the first three weren't, they're kids that like soccer or whatever, but they also like Marvel. And I worry that it's going to go too into that just monetarily, but they'll pull it off. I'm sure they always do.
Yeah. A couple thoughts. You look back at when the MCU started, and it really started with that Iron Man movie. So I think Spider-Man Far From Home, were they trying to do that and make Tom Holland kind of the new face of the MCU, the character that everything kind of revolves around? I don't know. It's not super clear to me after that. So what will be the tentpole kind of thing that centers everything? I don't know. Is it going to be Wanda? I don't know. Is it Captain Marvel? I don't know. We'll find out here soon, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. We would have known more in 2021 had it been a normal year in 2020. We would have had three right. movies last year, or two at least.
Yeah.
We would have had Tai Chi, I think, early this year too. So we would have had three by this point maybe. But anyway, so I don't know. But it's important that they establish like a direction early. And to your comment, Richard, about convolutedness, I'm totally okay with convolutedness if they're trying to build something early. If like, okay, we need to reset. Totally. We've got WandaVision, this Winter Soldier series, and one more show to kind of set up our world. And then from then on, it's going to be just, we're just living in it, right?
And I trust them to connect those dots. I would just say, from what we've seen before, they started simple with Iron Man, or like Brian mentioned, when they started going into space with Guardians of the Galaxy, a little bit with Thor. They started simple and then worked to this very complex storyline. Mm-hmm. Now it seems like they're starting from complex, and they may very awesomely build it back to where it's a really simple thing to understand. And I think and hope they will. It's just different, it's just a different, kind of thing. And so I look at this and go, man, if this is the same trajectory of the pre-Endgame Marvel universe, we're starting at a much more complex point. And if it's going to go up from here, oh boy, but it probably won't. That's just an interesting thing to talk about.
Sure. I would guess, and I don't know this at all, obviously, but at least my thought coming into this series, and whether it, I don't know whether this, I don't think this series changes that for me, but I don't know. I'm open to the idea. I think I take exactly what you're saying, Richard. I think you have this like vast network of interconnecting parts, that have come out over the course of 22 movies or whatever. But I think the idea is that it all sort of funnels through. That all comes together with Endgame, and now Endgame is your next launching point to build from, again, from quote unquote simple out, kind of like what you're saying. But whether they can do that while also bringing in all these elements from the previous phases that you want to continue to see take part in, in the next phases of this thing, and then what in the world happens with Far From Home by bringing in everything.
Right.
Or excuse me, Spider-Man 3.
No Way Home.
That,
yeah, yeah.
That movie no is Way called. Home. Like, okay, there we go.
I happen to be looking
I don't know.
At
it. I'm not. That will be... No, and look at you. You knew. But if you do that Spider-Man movie in the similar way that they did Into the Spider-Verse, and it's sort of self-contained, like here's the movie that features Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire and Tom Holland and, you know, whatever else, then that's it. We're not going to bring them back again. I think that's doable, but we'll see, but that's a lot. You're right. Like, it's a lot to compress down into a new starting point if they are not very careful with it.
I don't want to get down that train
sure.
far. As the train is literally passing, I'm sorry about if there's noise, but hey, four stockyards for you on a Tuesday at 10:30 PM. But yeah, that's going to be interesting. Like, do they feel a need to retcon those Spider-Man movies or something? Like, is anybody super upset about those existing? Like, I think we're fine with them. I feel like we've reset Spider-Man. Like, I guess we'll overall see a purpose in that being a thing, but we'll find out at some point. And one more point on Spider-Man, and I got a lot more to talk about WandaVision, but Brian, to your point about your kid and, you know, Spider-Man and all that, mm-hmm. Spider-Man is just such a fun character to watch on screen, young character that kids can relate to. And I think that having that at its core, I think is really attractive. And I think Black Panther was such a fun world to live in, a character that just is really awesome in the action scenes. And Wakanda is just such an awesome place. And it's a character you really care about. So
yeah.
I think they've got those going for them in terms of little kids caring mm-hmm. and maybe Guardians of the Galaxy. But do they bring back Captain America? Do kids give a rip about Thor that much? Is it more for the adults at this point? Is that why Taika is kind of taking it in a more mature direction and bringing in Jeff Goldblum to be in the movie? Yeah, maybe.
No, kids love Goldblum, dude. Those,
yeah, they do.
I don't hang out with a lot of kids, but because
you got Disney Plus series, so hey.
Yeah, the judge was pretty specific, but the ones mm-hmm. I do hang out with, they're always like MrApartments.com, and I'm like, wow, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, if I had a dollar for every time I woke up on a Saturday and Coop was watching The Fly, mm-hmm. It's constant.
Daddy, can we watch The Lost World, Jurassic Park? No, son. but yeah.
Can we watch Earth Girls Are Easy?
So let's talk about some people involved in this. Richard.
Yep.
Catherine Hahn.
Oh,
Agnes.
Man. Let's get out
She's
of the way
great.
For Richard. Yeah.
Love Catherine Hahn in myriad ways. She's great in this. She is one of these people that she really excels, and you can't do it too much. And I hope she actually kind of goes away for a little bit because she's had a bunch of these in a row. But she's so good at showy roles. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she, when you kind of let her just go in a really loud performance, she like becomes a real star, you know, in a lot of ways. And so you look at something as silly as Step Brothers or her little role in Parks and things like that. But she's also this really accomplished, great, grounded indie film actress. And she's great in that too. But man, she can really turn it up to 11. And it was fun to watch her really do that here. She's the best. She's one of the best actresses going. I'm never right about anything, but I was early on Catherine Hahn and so were my loins. So that's good too. No, but I love her. She's great.
Maybe early tease. She'll end up on your top 10 actresses list
perhaps.
In a couple episodes.
Perhaps. Or
something like that. Yeah, man. So she was fantastic in this. She fit into all these little worlds so well, whether it was the early 50s, you know, mm-hmm. or even at the end of Breaking the Fourth Wall. I think
she has a very chameleon look anyway, outside of that. She's always looks different.
The character of Agnes, even the character she's playing in this, aside from Catherine Hahn, the actress, was a perfect character mm-hmm. in this. Such a mysterious character. One that I think the fanboys were onto pretty early on in terms of the Agatha Harkness connection. But to see that all play out in I guess 9 episodes was really, really fun. And that brings a bigger question, like, and this is kind of an eye roll for me. You're not watching the video, but It's like, are we bringing witchcraft into the MCU now? Like, is that going to have to be a thing? Like,
you know, that was a topic of hot discussion in some little Christian school in the Midwest.
They already banned WandaVision.
Watch the Scarlet Witch. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Harry Potter conundrum all over again.
Quote unquote Scarlet Witch, a witch backstory, but like,
yeah.
I don't want any more Salem Witch Trials scenes in my MCU. I don't know about you guys.
That's all I want. I want.
You've been saying that since 08, too.
I have been.
That was your big indictment of Iron Man.
Saying it since Edward Norton's Hulk. You've been like, this was only during the Salem Witch Trials. I think I'd be in.
Yeah, it's like, Ragonk is good, but it could use more Hocus Pocus energy.
Not one Bette Midler lookalike
in
this
whole
thing.
Sarah Jessica Parker? Yeah.
Yeah. I say that about most films.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's. I like one thing I like about Marvel, and again, and we've to reiterate, I know nothing about comic books. I missed that as a kid. But one thing I like about Marvel is sort of the diversification of the way people have their powers. Maybe DC has this too. I just don't know it as well. But it's like, rich guy has a suit. All right, cool. This guy's a Nordic god. Cool. This guy got injected with stuff in World War II and then got frozen. Cool. This guy met a weird Tilda Swinton, and now he has powers. He was a surgeon.
All right, cool. Tilda Swinton.
And so,
no other kind, though, to be honest.
I don't know. This just radioactive spider.
Of that is so good to me. I love that.
Radioactive spider.
This guy's cool. A raccoon.
Aliens, done. They've got alien powers. They're from stronger planets, you know? And so, like, I don't mind a witch. I think that's a fine thing. But if we had
the line at three, though, three is where the cutoff.
Okay, let's take this further. I'm adding witch content to my backwoods, anti-backwoods movies.
Oh, okay.
Anti-witch. Gotcha. Any witch. I don't need witches.
You're starting to infringe on my corner, dude, because you know I'm out on horror movie witchcraft.
Okay. So that, well, I'm okay with horror movie witchcraft, but I don't like these spell witch. Maybe that's why I'm not super into Harry Potter, honestly.
Gotcha.
It's like a deep rooted thing in my soul where I just am not in super into witches. But yeah,
we were like, no. It's weird they brought witches into it until Disney buys WB in 2 years and brings Harry Potter.
And Agnes is like, it was Agatha all along.
Yeah, but until Harry Potter is suddenly MCU canon. And we're like, wow. Yeah. And Radcliffe's coming back. And they're like, yeah, 75 mil, bro. Like, what? Yeah. And, Stephen Frears is directing it.
Well, they've already established the Harry Potter, Now You See Me Cinematic Universe connection. That's
fair.
Clear
that's
reveal. Fair. And now you
think that would be incredible. They just kept
Radcliffe is Harry Potter in a different multiverse.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why he knows it so well.
Yeah. That's why he knows the art of.
I just like him. Sense. Like, yeah. I like that. That's still great where they go, hey, I'm your agent, Daniel. Hey man, hey, you know, you don't want to, you know, we get scripts all the time for you to be a wizard, you know, typecasting being what it is. Yeah. We're not doing those, but this one, you just hate wizards, magicians.
You hate magic.
You hate them. I'm in. Heck yeah, man.
That's amazing.
Count me in, mate. That's my English accent. It's pretty good. He's Australian, I think.
Yeah, he's Australian, I think, apparently. It turns out that the WandaVision world is a hex that Scarlet Witch herself has placed on the Earth because she's so depressed about the passing of Vision and how S.W.O.R.D. has deceived her into thinking that they're tearing him apart or whatever, or how they fished her into there to create a diversion or some blackmail distraction. And I really loved that sequence when the hex is created and you see it spreading out and turning all the normal stuff into vintage stuff. You know, that was one of the more incredible visual effect sequences like maybe I've seen ever.
Jack White was
quite honest with you. And the one with the car like trying to drive fast as the Hex was driving away, I'm thinking, oh my God, how awesome would it be if the car gets like caught halfway in the Hex as it's driving, and like the back half of the car is a VW bus and the front half of the car is like a regular truck, right? Mm-hmm. And that didn't happen. And I was like, no. But they did have a scene there where some cops were turned into clowns, which was a funny little jab at the ACAB movement, I think, or an endorsement of that. But that was awesome. But then the next episode, they kind of show that again, and then they did do the car, the half car, and I was like, yes, the half car, the half an inch car, because that would have been such a cool visual. But man, Brian, comment on that whole 10 minute thing. You're just like, this is like better than movie visual, like level production that they've been
visual effects on this were really stinking good. They deserve quite a bit of credit. Turns out Disney has a lot of money, so it's good that they were able to pump some of that into the TV side of things. You know, like, I thought it was awesome. I thought it looked really cool, and it was the explainer on her powers and the way that they get around to, because she doesn't really know how she's doing it, or maybe even if she's doing it, and to have that play out the way that it did, and to see it in motion, I thought was really cool. And I enjoyed, it was cool seeing her, like, as she's driving through the town and you see all those characters that popped up later. And as you know, the delivery guy becomes the pizza man becomes the postal employee, and the mom from That 70s Show, like, gets her husband back and things like that. I thought it was a very, I don't know. I was very impressed with the way that they pulled that all together, and kind of it made you, at least for me, it made me appreciate the previous episodes even more, because there's just so many kind of called shots in the midst of those first few episodes that they pay off when she, you know, first expands the Hex for the first time. Yeah, like, all the, from a visual standpoint, incredible. It was a really cool thing that they were able to do, and you're right, like, it was movie level. Like, you would never think, even, I mean, we've been in the peak TV era for however many, two decades really now, and even still, to me, there's times where I'm kind of surprised. I'm like, wow, this is a TV show, and I shouldn't be that way anymore, but it still kind of creeps into my head, and that was pretty incredible.
So even more, I think, even the last 5 years, it's like, what is even either? You know, it's really just time is the only difference now with a lot of these budgets on these TV shows. The only difference is 8 hours versus two or whatever. Right? It's crazy. It's a mad, mad world. Sorry, Scorsese.
Hey, if Scorsese could get 10 hours in the budget that this got, I'm sure he would take it.
I know. Yeah.
I'm sure he would.
It's kind of weird that he hasn't come around on that yet, honestly.
Yeah.
It's just
because
old.
Of that. Because he's like,
it's
wait,
just old. I'm going to make a 10
hour picture.
Yeah. If it's not projected in a cinema, it's not a picture. That's for you, Shane. The thing.
What would it, Kent, what would it look like if George Lucas was talking to Scorsese?
Marty, you got to stick to your guns, man. You know, Netflix is, it's fake. It's not a real thing. It didn't happen. It's not. There is no Netflix. I mean, it's just it's a mirage.
Well, you're right, George. I got to make a picture. That's probably why you got out of the business, right?
That's exactly why I got out of the business. It's not a business anymore. It's more of a, well, I don't want to use a bad term, but it's more of an exchange, if you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean, George. Good talking to you. Goodbye.
Damn,
he hangs up his 1920s style phone.
Now, what if Glenn from Ruby Tuesday were to get in the mix, or Red Robin was to get in the mix?
Oh, Glenn.
Yeah.
Well, this is a new character I have named Glenn that works at Tuesday morning.
Hello, this is Glenn. It's a wonderful day here at Tuesday morning. How may I be of service to you today?
Tuesday.
And Glenn is super committed to his job. Just loves getting up every day, working at Tuesday morning, arranging knickknacks. You know, lives to talk to old ladies. He's kind of like Bernie from the movie Bernie with Jack Black.
Actual question for non-Tejas Mam fan. Is Tuesday morning everywhere? I know it's headquartered here. Or is it just a Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas thing? Or are they everywhere? That's my question.
I don't know.
Email, well, I guess we'll get comments VIP, on that
because they'll be like, Kent, what the heck was the Tuesday morning guy impression?
Tuesday.
But yeah, that's a joke for maybe some regional Mam Fam.
I don't know. I may be worldwide. I don't know. I just
maybe. I think it's huge in Singapore.
It is. Tuesday morning. They love it.
So we find out that this is Agatha all along, pulling the string, so to speak, literally. Boy. With a marionette.
That one has been in my head for 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh, that Munsters
wandering around the house, that Munsters singing theme songs at the about end. My dog.
Catherine Hahn.
What else is new though for me?
I saw she was.
I know,
on
but
the
they're
show.
All Agatha related. Yeah. It's just it's rough.
Is that a '90s grunge rock about?
Yeah. I saw she was on
Lucy.
She said Catherine Hahn said on a talk show recently. I think it like charted after the show came out, and because she sings in it, she's gonna get like a huge check for this vocal performance on Agatha All Along. But yeah, maybe that's probably the crowning achievement of WandaVision is Agatha All Along was awesome, and Catherine Hahn, future American treasure Catherine Hahn, showcasing her skills. That was cool.
There were people complaining about Catherine Hahn early in the not like, man, she's not doing a good job, but like, I don't know, two or three episodes in, there was a bunch of like, imagine if it was this person or something like that. And I was like, well, number one, how dare you? It's Catherine Hahn. She's incredible. But number two, you don't think that she's like, clearly she's going to be something. Like it was for me at least, it seemed very clear from minute one. I know nothing about these comics. So I obviously didn't know who she is or what she was going to end up being, but it was pretty clear that she was going to be a bigger part of this than just the nosy neighbor. I was like, everybody just be patient maybe for a couple episodes and then you'll see how great Catherine Hahn is, and lo and behold, that's what happened.
She is great. Great, great. What a cast.
Yeah, so on the next episode...
Yeah.
On the next episode, it's called Previously On, and that one, I guess it's maybe the weakest one. It's kind of a flashbacky episode of giving some context to Scarlet Witch.
I loved this episode. I'll be honest. That might be my favorite episode of the bunch. Like it's very emotionally affecting, and you get a better glimpse at, because we never really get a truly established origin for Wanda and Pietro in Ultron or anywhere else. It's just sort of mentioned as like, this is who they are, and again, I don't read the comics. So I don't really know too much of what was happening there, but I thought that was I think that episode was very important to the core of the show. And so it worked very well for me. I thought it was a pretty fun way having Agatha use her powers to sort of dance back through these flashback scenes in order to find out what she needs to find out. I don't know. It worked for me. I thought it was pretty affecting.
It was good, but it just felt like such a departure, I guess, from what I was expecting the show to be. And but it did gave a lot more context to the world and Sokovia and some of the trauma, why this happened, I guess, with Wanda. So that was nice. We didn't touch on Kat Dennings or AKA Darcy being back and involved. Not sure I care about that. Felt a little bit ancillary to me.
Yeah, didn't kind of thrown in.
Maybe she's gonna have a bigger role in Ragonk 3 or 2 or whatever it is, 4. but yeah, that didn't seem like a thing that needed to be a thing. I think they could have done anything else there. Not anything else, but like just cut
she's
that entire
after
character.
Two broke girls though. So
well,
that's
no, I mean, there's nothing against Kat Dennings at all. I just didn't think that character was necessary at all in this show, like at all. Is you know, maybe it's like somebody that people recognize again to have one of those, but maybe.
Yeah,
you
know. I think for her more than anything, it's I assume she's going to be part of Thor what's it called? Love and Thunder. Is that the mm-hmm. title? Mm-hmm. I think it is. So it's a reestablishing. Hey, by the way, remember this girl who was in these movies like almost a decade ago? Well, we need to remind y'all that who she is and that she's part of this whole thing. That's kind of how I took it.
That works. And let's get to the finale here, guys. You know, my wife was really invested into the show too. Like mm-hmm. she would wake up on, I would watch it on Fridays and have my Discord stuff. And it was her like tradition to do watch it on Saturdays. And after she would get off work. So she was always really excited about it. So I would always ask her thoughts after it. And she was just like, sometimes she'd come in from the bedroom from watching it and be like, oh my gosh, that episode, you know, just be super psyched on it and be like, I'm so into this. And then, we watched the end and like, I get a day or few went by. I say, hey, did you finish WandaVision? She's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, what'd you think? She's like, yeah. I was like, oh, okay. You know, I guess it didn't stick the landing for a lot of people. Maybe a bit bombastic for this scaled down version, you know, with that giant fight at the end with Vision and Gray Vision and that whole laser situation, but it looked awesome. I thought it was a cool finale. If you're going to have a finale, it needs to be big, I think. So I don't know. I enjoyed it. I think I need to probably watch it again to see where I rank it among my favorite episodes of the series. But yeah. Where did you fall in the finale, Brian?
I did think it was a little bit lacking maybe compared to some of the other episodes. And part of that maybe is the conceit, because by that point we've completely abandoned the sitcom bit and the tie-ins to all those things. So we're fully into just it that felt like any other third act in a Marvel movie, pretty much.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because again, they're incredibly successful and they're usually very, very good movies, and we have established many times over that the third act is usually the weakest part of most of those films. And so it kind of went that direction a little bit. There was some cool stuff along the way. You get the reveal with the full Monica Rambeau turning, like really establishing some of her powers. The reveal on or the Scarlet Witch, like her costume coming to and I thought it was a really cool final bit between her and Agatha. I really like with paint, with doing yeah. the runes and stuff, and that was really cool. I thought it was a good episode, not a great episode. And if we're kind of wondering, okay, where does this leave this story within the MCU, or where does the MCU go from here, I think that's a fair question. I do think that part of the, and I'm not saying this for Zoe Kent, but just the general, I don't know, disgruntlement with the finale is more of a, which we've seen a billion times over at this point, says much more about the internet and our obsession with fan theories and where this thing is going, and what will it meet my expectation or not. And I wish that people would stop doing that.
It's so
obnoxious.
She at this point. Does not.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying about any of that. I just mean, yeah, culture yeah. at large. I would say that from, I think Lost may be the first show/movie universe, whatever, that really, really played into the internet, right? And like the fan forums and the theories that avid viewers had and stuff. And then ultimately, everyone was disappointed with the Lost finale. And I think maybe some rightly so, and some it's just like, well, but just it comes across as, well, it didn't fit the theory that I personally had come to believe was the truth. And then we saw that with the Star Wars movies. We see it with a lot of these things. It's these big cultural touchstones in film and TV. I think like the Discord is great because we have these great conversations, and our VIPs are excited about the show and running ideas back and forth to each other and stuff. And it's a great thing. But I do think that it that type of anticipation and fan theories and whatnot, it ultimately just leads to being frustrated and upset with where it ended up, because where it ended up didn't reach what you thought that it was going to reach. I don't know. Like, again, I don't think that's the best episode of the series by any means. And, it was maybe a little bit lesser than the one before that and stuff. And I still thought it was pretty solid, but I think that a lot of people are setting themselves up for failure with this, like, kind of obsession with, like, what's going to happen. Here's what I think is going to happen. Here's what I think is going to happen. It just ultimately leads you to a bad place. So I thought it was a fine episode and a good conclusion. Where it goes from there, I don't know. And I don't know if it'll be successful on that front. I think that's kind of what Richard was saying when he jumped in, is like, if I don't know if you want to take it from there, but so I don't know. I don't know if that'll work or not, but it was, I thought it was a fine episode and a semi-strong conclusion to the series as a whole, or the season at least.
Yeah. I just kind of ended up sort of confused by it, you know, but not like in bad confused, but just seemed, it didn't fully tie together, but that's not necessarily the point with these, right? I mean, these are supposed to be, you know, I don't even want to say movies anymore. 25 pieces of content. It's unlike anything else in television that you watch, where you expect to be coming to this great resolution, and maybe it's only a little bit of resolution, but there's going to be 6 movies that touch this in the next 3 years. And so it's like you kind of sit there going, because you're used to that with film, right? You walk out, especially with kind of cinematic stuff, you walk out and go, okay, well, I'll see another one here soon. But with this, because this is probably the end of this quote unquote show. Okay, that didn't fully land it for me, but you know, maybe Doctor Strange 2 will land it more. I mean, it's a hard thing to fully like, especially as someone who's mostly just a TV watcher, maybe to comprehend.
Sure.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. And, you know, you said season finale, Brian, you know, I think this is a one-off series. I don't think there's going to be a season 2 of WandaVision. I don't want there to be a season 2 of WandaVision. Again, I think the entire thesis that they had circled, underlined on the board, was make people care about these characters. And I think they did that. And if this is a one-off, I think it was mission accomplished for me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what more y'all have to touch on this, but I'm ready. I'm almost ready for grades.
Let's grade it out.
I've almost exhausted my notes, but I wanted to give a shout out to one of our VIPs in the Discord here. Let me scroll up to his comments on the Discord, because it was so long ago. I'm going to have to, I'm giving a shout out to VIP Ryan, Winter, who, was on our WandaVision channel and said, I think summarized it perfectly. He said, the best thing about this show was the theories and guesswork. And in turn, what made the finale disappointing was the theories and guesswork.
Sure.
Bingo.
That was exact bingo. Like, yeah. We had so much fun talking about it. And then that ultimately is what disappointed us in the end, was that we had so much fun talking about it that we didn't have so much fun talking about it anymore.
Yeah.
When it was over.
That's part of it too, though, the staggered release again.
Just
part of his point was that was the fun of it. I wish more shows we could get more of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to get better as a society at,
in general.
Yeah, it just like separating those fan-based ideas and desires for these movies and shows and stuff from the ultimate ending. Like, Lost to me is the again, I would keep going back to it, is the best example for me. I was like, I watched the finale. That was a show that I got together with friends back when you could do that, and we watched that show every single week for like 3 years. Let's say the last 3 years of the show, I think I was at a friend's house watching that show almost every single week, and we got to the finale and it ended and I was like, that's fine. It didn't really do what I thought what I was kind of hoping it would do. It didn't give me satisfactory answers to every question that it asked through the course of the show, but it's fine. I'm all right. And there were so many people in that room that were just like, well, this is garbage, and were so angry because it didn't hit the thing that they were expecting the show to be. And I think that's played out many times with Star Wars. To me, is another great example of, we've seen it happen over the last, since post Force Awakens, through those last two Star Wars movies, like just people just being so ticked about. And so I would love for us, I think Ryan, you're spot on. I think it would be great if we could figure out how to engage in those conversations, have the fun of that, the theories and the exchange of ideas and whatnot, without it ultimately ruining the thing for it. So if we could just hey, great. Wouldn't it be cool if, but like temper our expectation of, will it be that? I don't know. True. That seems like a better way to approach these things personally. But
that's somebody that kind of stays
out of the fan theory stuff altogether on most things. So,
but it's fun to talk about, as Richard said, at the same time. It's fun to have that communal experience. I give WandaVision an A. Really enjoyed it. Near perfect. So it's an A, not an A plus. The A plus would be perfect. Near perfect for me. Loved it. Really, really blew my expectations away. What about you, Ryan?
I'll give it an A. I came in A minus. I do think it suffers a tiny bit that the last episode is lesser than the maybe the previous like four episodes before that. But it was pretty satisfactory to me at the end, and I thought it had some incredible highs. So, and also I love Elizabeth Olsen. So I'll go with an A as well. I'll stick with an A. What about you, RB?
I was going to go B, but Elizabeth Olsen went to high school with Haim, so I'm going to bump it up to a B+.
And her sisters were crushes of my, I don't know, 10 years of my life was devoted to being in love with Mary-Kate and
years
Ashley.
25 to 35.
Yeah, and they were 35 to 45, and they weren't looking that great, so it was kind of... kind of a weird time.
Yeah.
It was weird. Yeah. All right. That's WandaVision, Rants and Raves. Let us know what you think of WandaVision on Twitter at Mad About Movies and via the VIP Discord, all that stuff. The WandaVision conversation continues from the spoilers channel. It's still going on as I'm speaking. So chime in on that. If you want to scroll back to that and read all of those comments, it's a lot of fun. So check that out. MadAboutMoviesPodcast.com/VIP. Thanks so much for listening. Follow us all on Twitter at BGo12, at Kent Garrison, and at Richard Barden. We love you. Thank you. And hope to see you soon. Cinema.
And I killed Sparky, too.